You're probably familiar with all this yourself, Lee, Mario.
No.
You're not? Oh, I thought you were. So just bear with me now. I'm going to make a little bit of noise while I start turning things on, okay? Now, I just want to walk back here and just turn on what we call the tower. This is our feature film. That is approximately 115 minutes. I'm now just going to strike up the bulb. And I'll just let that go for a second. And then we'll run the machine and we'll let you see the system in operation. Is that okay?
Yeah, finished.
Comicast, that's number one comic podcast. I'm Craig.
I'm Liam.
And we are here at a special event, an exhibition, if you will. Why don't you tell the listeners all about it, Liam?
We're here in the Lighthouse Cinema in Smithfield for the launch of Taming Light, a new exhibition inspired by the works of Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's kind of lots of Irish. There were mostly kind of Irish artists, including some of our favourites,
including our number one favourite, Mr. Chris Judge,
who we'll be talking to later.
Yeah,
we'll also be talking to David Cleary, who's another one of the exhibitors in this exhibition. But right now, we're going to go over to John McGuire, who is the curator and also a film critic from the Sunday Business Post. And I spoke to him a couple of days ago while he was setting up this exhibition, and he kind of gave me a quick tour.
Awesome.
Talking to the curator of this new exhibition, Taming Light, kind of inspired by Stanley Kubrick's
works. That's right,
works.
As a tribute to Kubrick's films and his life and his work 10 years on from his death. That's why when I first thought that we'd hit 2009 and that Kubrick had been dead for 10 years, and more to the point that I hadn't seen a Kubrick movie for 10 years, and that's where you really miss him, is in the cinema. I didn't want to do a retrospective of films. I wanted to do something to mark the event, but I just didn't want to show the movies again. You can watch the movies anytime, in any place. And I was trying to figure out what to do. So I was in Berlin, and I saw graffiti on the side of a wall. You know the way they have these massive graffiti, wall-sized graffitis in Berlin, and it was beautifully composed between these two pillars of Nicholson from The Shining coming through the door, but instead of the knife and the Here's Johnny and all that stuff, the axe, whatever it was, he's holding a spray can. And I took a photograph of it and brought it home. It took a lot of photographs that day of graffiti, but this is the one I kept coming back to, and I was like, that's so beautifully composed, beautifully rendered, and it also has a kind of a sinister wit about it. And that, to me, says a lot about Kubrick. It was a very Kubrickian image. And I thought, actually, I spoke to Chris Judge, and we were showing the picture, and we were chatting away about it. And I had said to him, I have this huge archive of Kubrick material at home, and I was like, you must do me a Kubrick image for my own self, just for myself at home. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll do you something. And then out of that idea that I would have these few pieces, in the interim, I had bought a few other Kubrick pieces online, came the show, where I then contacted a load of other artists with mainly over emails, basically, spending time on web galleries, going through blogs, going through websites, trying to find that little Kubrick spark in an artist, a photographer, an illustrator, whatever it is. Contacting the artist via email, just explaining myself what the big project was, what I wanted to do. And I might have sent 30 emails, and I got, there's 26 pieces in the show. There was no refusals. The only refusals were people who had either got an exhibition already in October or were just unable to complete a piece. But the outpouring, for want of a better word, of people who really wanted to pay tribute. As soon as he explained that it's been 10 years and that it's an anniversary that requires somebody to, you know, say, hang on a minute, it's been a decade. All the artists responded really quickly, which is great. Great to see.
What is it about Kubrick's work that kind of lends itself to an exhibition of this type?
Well, the films are the films. The films are extant. I'm not showing any movies. I'm not really discussing the films. We're not trying to... The films have been analysed and perhaps a little bit over-analysed in the times that they've been released. What we're trying to do here is show how that influence of a compositor, of a filmmaker, an image maker, a picture maker, one of the greatest picture makers in 20th century American cinema, this guy could very, very quickly communicate hugely complicated, difficult ideas about humanity, love, sex, death, war, violence, whatever it might be, these big, big themes, and could compose a frame of cinema that communicated precisely what he wanted you to see. And very few directors get to do that or have the talent to do that. And cinema today is about compromise. It's about negotiation. It's about making do. And Kubrick, well, that was never enough for Kubrick. That just wouldn't wash with him. So if he was stuck for a way to communicate an image, he'd create a lens, or he'd adapt a lens, or he'd create a massive set. Because it's about technique. It's about composition. It's about scale and spectacle and image making. And he was relentless, and absolutely relentless, and a perfectionist. And they're very admirable qualities for an artist who's sitting in his studio to say, well, that is such an inspiration, such an inspirational character. And that's why I think we got the response that we did, because people who like the films, people who love the films, these ideas are just there bubbling in their heads as it is, you know. They just need a prod. It's great. It was great to be able to provide it for
them. Yeah, and it's international and Irish artists. So
mainly Irish, yeah, mainly Irish. There's a few. This is an image of Alex, a screen printed. It's one of an edition of 200 from a San Francisco-based artist called Two Cents, mainly a street artist around New Mexico, California, Southern California, and this I bought even before I talked to Chris George or I had this idea for the show. I had bought this as part of a series on cinematic heroes. And I've been in touch with Two Cents quite a bit over the last 6 or 8 months. And he had initially wanted to do another piece for the show, but I think this is perfect. I think it's exactly what... because it has the gaze, this Kubrickian gaze, where the male leads in a lot of his films will directly address the camera and stare you out. And I think he captures it perfectly in what is just literally just a stencil, spray-painted stencil. Lovely image, a great picture, I think. This is a piece from Mark Wickham, who's this is pen and ink on paper from Paths of Glory, a beautifully rendered, absolutely precise illustration, where he's captured perfectly that room in France where this court-martial takes place in Paths of Glory, with these characters in the background awaiting their fate, and in the centre this long, lugubrious face of this French soldier who's just discovered what is going to happen to him. And it perfectly captures it absolutely precisely, but there's also a gentle wit about it too. It's not a comic image outright, but there's something funny about it, I think, at the same time. Well, Chris is a favourite of yours, I know.
Yeah, he is.
Chris Judge is a great, great... I think he's one of the best young Irish artists working at the moment.
Absolutely.
And has a completely unique vision that is a crossover between comics and cartoons, which he's usually influenced by, and fine art.
Yeah, he said he's hidden himself somewhere in there.
Yeah, there he is.
Wait, is that him?
Yeah, immediately, obviously, that's him.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, no, it is now that you say it.
Yeah.
I couldn't actually find him myself, because sometimes he has a beard, you see. I wasn't sure, but yeah, that is now
that
you point
definitely
out,
that him, definitely, yeah. He's also directly in line with Jack Nicholson. So it's an image taken from one of the last shots in The Shining, of the Overlook Hotel wall, and it creates that question in your mind about the film itself, which is, how are we in a loop here, some kind of a temporal loop? These odd events that happen in the film might just be jumps in time rather than something particularly supernatural. It could be super physical, which is a completely different reading in the movie, you know, when you watch it. And I think it's just a great image because it's joyous but really creepy. Look at the expression on Nicholson's face, which is so perfectly taken from the image in the movie. But worse than that, it has shades of the Joker about it, and has shades of, you know, it's just really, really creepy.
Yeah, and everybody has kind of a, you know, she kind of looks kind of like worried, and there's all kind of...
Yeah, and this woman is looking away from the camera, this guy's looking away from the camera, this woman's looking away from the camera. But, you know, how in just these few strokes of the pen, Chris can create a face and then say, okay, that's great, but he's got 300 faces.
Yeah.
All with different few definite strokes. I think it's terrific. Lovely image.
Ahead, well, please. I was just going to ask, because I don't think I have, of what you would consider maybe your favourite Kubrick film.
Well, there's 13 features. I don't really regard his first film, Fear and Desire. Kubrick never regarded it, never wanted it to be shown, so I wouldn't regard that necessarily as a Kubrick film, more of a training film. And then there's Spartacus, which I don't regard as a Kubrick film at all, because it was just a job of work. I like them all, of the rest of them. There's ones that I like and return to more than others, and they would be The Shining and 2001. I think 2001 is his great masterpiece because of the time and place it came from, but also because of the limitations that existed in cinema at the time in terms of what you could and couldn't do. Remember, this is 1960, middle of the 1960s, and he overcame all of those in a process that took a long time and was expensive and time-consuming and difficult and caused no end of fractious argument on set, but he did it, and the film stands extant. It's complicated and it's puzzling, but it is a beautiful film to watch and a great experience. Just to see it and watch 2001 is a great experience.
And so this one here, this piece we're looking at by Francis Matthews.
Yeah, that's right. Francis is a young artist, young Irish artist, Dublin based, works in oils on canvas, beautifully photorealistic technique. And this is an interior of the Overlook Hotel from The Shining, and it's essentially just a bare corridor. Nothing particularly dramatic or exciting about it. But look at the carpet, instantly recognizable. Look at the brown on the walls, the brown wood, the bar of light across the centre of the screen, then this black, brown-black monolithic thing right at the end, and it's just unnerving. It's such a creepy, creepy image.
It is great. There's even a kind of an upside-down cross, it looks like, on the...
Well, yeah, I asked him about that. Apparently, that's a sprinkler with the reflection on the shiny roof. He didn't actually... I don't think it's an intentional satanic remark on Francis's part. But anyway, just to look at the technique, the composition, the use of colour, all those things to me say Kubrick, and I think Francis did a wonderful job. It's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant picture. This is from a Galway-based artist called Geraldine Doherty. This is an image of Nicole Kidman in Eyes Wide Shut, set in a bathroom, which is a very Kubrickian thing. Kubrick liked to have, see if you remember the scene in The Shining or the scene in Full Metal Jacket where he likes to go into the bathrooms. And it's Nicole Kidman, slightly stoned, having this conversation off frame, off canvas, with Tom Cruise, unfortunately. And there she is, propped up against the door. I think there's something great about the use of blue and the skin tone and the expression on her face. Geraldine is a fascinating artist because the vast majority of her work up to this point, this is her first portrait and her first painting that isn't directly influenced by Alfred Hitchcock, another great filmmaker, another towering filmmaker in the history of cinema. And Geraldine likes to paint the backgrounds of Hitchcock movies. And this is her first non-Hitchcock. I think it's great. It's a great image because it's sexy and puzzling and unnerving slightly at the same time. So I like it a lot. But this is from a printmaker called Alan Lambert, a filmmaker, part of the Experimental Film Club. And this is a page from Barry Lyndon, the memoirs of Barry Lyndon, the original book, page 114. And in it, on the other side, Alan has introduced, on top of the original page, references to this code that Kubrick used, the CRM 114, which is an in-joke, really, a kind of a something that he introduced us into the films that he made, just as he said himself, to see if the audience was paying attention. And so there's a reference to the CRM code in Dr. Strangelove, in A Space Odyssey, where the pod serial number is CRM 114. In The Clockwork Orange, they inject Alex with Serum 114, which is, again, a lovely piece of wit. And then in Eyes Wide Shut, the mortuary is level Wing C, room 114. And to me, that CRM 114 is an in-joke. It is a nerdy kind of cineasty thing. But to see it represented that way, you get some indication of the way that Kubrick's mind worked in the process of constructing his films, where in the midst of this chaos that existed around a man creating this a towering director figure, creating these huge films, he found time to put in some little touch, personal to himself, identifiable maybe to 1% of the viewing audience who would say, ah, there we are. But, you know, there it is. It's the part of the movie and a part of the history of the cinema. I think it's terrific.
And you were telling me earlier on that there won't be any Kubrick films.
No, we're not going to show any, no.
Why is that?
Well, there's two reasons for it. One, this is a not-for-profit show. None of this work is available for sale through the Lighthouse or through myself as a gallerist. I'm not a gallerist. So there isn't the money to bring over a print of a film to show, to hire a cinema, to bring over a print, transport it, insure it, and all that kind of thing. We just don't have the funds for that. Because we're independent. I didn't go looking for major sponsorship. I didn't go looking for Arts Council sponsorship. Because I wanted it to be a kind of a personal tribute from myself and the artists involved. Predominantly the artists involved. So showing movies is an expensive business. Now, I didn't want to do that. But second of all, I don't want somebody to go in and watch Barry Lyndon and then come out and look at David Turpin's piece inspired by Barry Lyndon, because there's no comparison. David's a talented artist, no doubt about it, and a great draftsman, and this image is full of drama, but Barry Lyndon is a different scale and a different thing altogether. And I don't think the artist would thank me for the comparison. You know?
Mm-hmm. And what do you hope people will get?
What do I hope they get out of the show?
Yes.
Well, I think, first of all, I want them to be reminded that Kubrick is still alive, that the films that he make allow him to be eternal. That is the great reward of cinema. So that is the first thing. But second of all, I want them to see how vibrant his images are and how they are still part of the visual landscape and they're still active in the minds of creative people. So you and I can sit down and watch a movie and be delighted by it, be excited by it, be turned on or turned off, whatever it might be. But an artist will sit and watch a movie and there's a different filtration, a different system working in their minds. And that's what I wanted to capture, because that's what I think is fascinating. And I'm looking forward to a new generation of image makers. I want to see more of this kind of work. Maybe not as directly inspired by Kubrick as this is, but each of the artists in this show, I can't wait to see what they do next June.
Absolutely. Well, John McGuire, thank you very
thanks,
much.
Thanks, Liam. Delighted. Thanks a million. Yeah, thank you.
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave? Dave, I really think I'm entitled to an answer to that question. I know everything hasn't been quite right with me, but I can assure you now, very confidently, that it's going to be all right again. I feel much better now. I really do.
David Cleary,
yeah,
who is taking part in the Taming Light exhibition. Can you tell us a bit about your piece?
Well, what can I say? It's a piece called Christmas Day 2004, and named because it was the day that it was made. I make a piece every Christmas Day. I started in 2003. I saw a site on Christmas Day that I thought was interesting, and now I try and do a piece every Christmas Day. And this was just literally in 2004 was the last Christmas that we had a good snowfall, and in the evening it started snowing, and I left my mother's house where I was having Christmas dinner, and I went out into the street and did a portrait of the snowfall, basically, under the street lamps. And I did a series of them, I think about 24 shots or so, and then afterwards I tried to get them all to be cohesive somehow, and I ended up not choosing one of the images, but I made this piece out of 9 of the images. And it was only afterwards that I really began to see it as being this 9-shot process that I use is kind of indebted to a cinema. It's almost meant to be like a celluloid strip. And it was afterwards that I began to see things in the picture that I hadn't realized I'd put in, as you can see in the bottom center of the piece, there seems to be an eye, a retina of an eye looking out. And when John McGuire asked me to do this show, this piece just popped up, because it was a while after I did it, I began to see a bunch of Kubrickian kind of images in it, the snowfall, like the shining snowfall, and the eye from the freak-out sequence at the end of 2001, watching the kind of cosmic space, and the snow suggested that as well. So I didn't want to do anything particularly illustrative from Kubrick's films or anything for the exhibition, and I just called on this because the exhibition ostensibly was about the influence of Kubrick. And so I think subtly, because I'm a huge Kubrick watcher, I consistently watch his films. I probably watch them weekly or at least fortnightly. And I think this is just one of those times that something leaked into my subconscious, and I think it definitely added to the picture in the end. It added to the composition of the picture without me even realizing it, which would be to Kubrick's want to actually to get you on a subconscious level.
Do you have a particular film of his that you saying you watch them regularly, but do you have a particular favourite?
No. For a long time it was Barry Lyndon, actually, if only because it has that kind of, it's the one you don't know, almost. I came to Barry Lyndon quite late and stuff, and so I love it. And the compositionally, the way he opens the frames with the actors standing like 200 yards away from the camera and framing these enormous picturesque, in inverted commas, vistas, that was a big one. But then you just, every time you see 2001, you're just, shocked. And I'm a huge sci-fi fan, and basically it's the Bible. It's the sci-fi Bible. And but then there's The Shining. You know what I mean? And then there's Paths of Glory and stuff. And so, no, I don't really have a favourite. I'd probably, as a fanboy, as the teenager inside me would probably say 2001. But the adult will say Barry Lyndon.
David, thanks very much for talking.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
The Comicast, we're still in the Lighthouse. What's it called? The Lighthouse
Cinema.
We found a
What's that called? We're in it.
Yeah, sorry, I'm drunk. There's very beer. We're in one of the cubicles here, trying to keep a little more quiet. It was a bit noisy outside, and you went and interviewed Mr. Michael Rycroft.
Yes, a man who's been involved in the Irish cinema business for over the past 40 years in terms of renovating and managing cinemas. So I just thought I'd go and ask him about the Irish perspective on Stanley Kubrick's films. And so I wanted to ask you specifically about Stanley Kubrick and his films.
Yes.
And did many of them come to the Oscar cinema?
Spartacus would have been one that springs to mind. I'm sure I would have played A Space Odyssey. I can't remember. A Clockwork Orange, yes, but that would have been nearly 30 years after its original release, because A Clockwork Orange went on release, I think, in 72. And it was banned here by the censor at the time. So when a film at that time was banned, it was banned for 7 years. It couldn't be resubmitted. Oh. And I think we had four bans, which is 28 years. So 72 to 28, what is that?
Four bans on the same...
On the same film, yeah, approximately.
Why was that?
It was considered too violent.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure it was about 28 years or there, about 72, 82, 92. No, it must have been three bans, because I think it opened... We did eventually play it around 1991, 92. Yeah. I have to say, I personally enjoyed it. I thought it was very clever, very well done, definitely ahead of its time. Good entertainment. And what more can I say? Now, of course, you can walk into any DVD shop and pick it up off the shelf, and there's no questions asked.
Yeah, and there wasn't any trouble then in 1990 or 1991?
No, not that far, I suppose. Well, video, of course, had been well and truly established, and I'm sure it would have turned up overseas. So even if it was banned, well, they would have been able to get a copy, and anybody who wanted to see it would have seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was A Clockwork Orange. But I have to say now, I loved it. I thought it was very cleverly done.
What about then the next film that would have come along? We'll say Barry Lyndon. If you remember that.
I do indeed remember Barry Lyndon, and I loved Barry Lyndon. I thought it was a masterpiece. That, a lot of that was filmed here, if not all of it.
That's right.
And I think they used the castle down in Carrick-on-Shore. It's not so much a castle, more of a big house. That was Ryan O'Neill, if I remember.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Mary Keane, late of the Kennedys of Castle Ross and a lot of the RTE dramas. I thought it was a brilliant movie. A fabulous film. I don't know how well it actually did money-wise, but certainly, and it doesn't appear that very often on television, as far as I know, but it is available as part of the Kubrick collection on DVD. Why am I advertising Kubrick?
We're still here in the Lighthouse Cinema.
Yeah. It's after dark. Well, it's very late. They've closed up shop. I've got my eyes on one or two pieces.
We're going to see what we can shift outside on the Smithfield market.
There'll be a competition next month, a new Comic Gas competition. Get some of the Stanley Kubrick artwork on display tonight.
Yeah, well, I guess one thing we should probably mention, or at least allude to, is... we've been here covering this event because of its ties to illustration, but there is a kind of a Kubrick tie to comic books.
Yeah.
Probably the only one that that I know of,
yeah,
in
absolutely.
Terms of Kubrick translations to comic books, and that's 2001, A Space Odyssey by the one and only...
Jack Kirby, yes.
Jack Kirby. So this, I think this came out, I know it came out around 10 years after the movie.
Okay.
So I can't, when did that movie come out? Around 62 or so? Yeah. Maybe 69 actually, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think it was 69.
I'm not sure.
But this comic came out like 10 years after the movie came out, which is a bit weird, so like it wasn't a tie-in.
Yeah.
Because we mentioned this actually on the show.
Yeah, I've read one of them.
Yes.
I didn't realise, which I've only learned as from research for this show, that there was an ongoing 2001 Space Odyssey series. I've read the sort of, it's just a remake of the actual movie.
Yeah,
by Jack Kirby, and it's pretty good. It's not as mind-blowing as I'd hoped when I'd heard of the existed.
Yeah.
It's a fairly kind of straight translation to comic of the movie, but sorry. But then this idea which you brought to the table, that he did an ongoing series, like there's sort of a sequel to Tuda movies.
Yeah, he kind of developed some of the stuff, like he caught the kind of baby that we see at the end, which I didn't even know there was a name for.
Yeah.
Apparently in film circles, you know, they do have a name for him. I can't remember it now, but Jack Kirby calls them Little Squirt.
Yes.
And these kind of... so in the continuing series, these are kind of characters. Usually what happens is, you know, someone is... See some sort of crazy light show like we do at the end, and they kind of turn into a little squirt, and then they kind of, like in one of them, this little squirt is brought to a world where there's only kind of like war and hatred, and this girl is about to be like beaten up by this gang, and this guy steps in to try and save her, but they're both killed, and Little Squirt is just observing all this, but he can't do anything about it. He's just watching it, but they're killed. So what he actually does is like take their essence to a new planet, you know, to sow this new planet in like the love of, you know, a fallen couple, as it were. So it's kind of weird. There's a lot of different things, and again, I haven't read it. I've just kind of read about it,
yeah,
because it's pretty hard to track down, I think.
Yes.
And apparently, Arthur C. Clarke was asked years later what he thought of the comic book version, but he only said he knew it existed, but he hadn't read it, because I think Kubrick himself kind of famously hated sequels,
okay,
of any kind, which is interesting, I guess, from the point of perspective of 2010,
yeah,
the year we make contact, the film.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
No, I haven't, but I've...
It is a great film. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. And, it wasn't a sequel created out of thin air. It was based on, again, another story, you know, follow-up story or book by Arthur C. Clarke. So, it wasn't some kind of hokum like, yes, Johnny Darko 2 or, you know...
The Net 2.0.
Yes. But, yeah, definitely worth looking up. Some really cool artwork. Like,
yeah,
if you
want to
see, like, some fucking... You know, two giants come together, the work of Kubrick meeting Jack Kirby. I mean, it is actually like mind blowing.
Yeah, absolutely. Highly recommended to try and dig it up and then send us a copy.
Yes. Well, I guess let's get on with the show.
Yeah. We're going to have an interview with Comic-Cast fan favorite and also Comic-Cast favorite, Chris Judge.
Chris Judge, yeah. He's got a piece in the exhibition, and I went to talk to him in a studio a couple of days ago.
Yeah, well, I was asked to submit a piece to this Kubrick exhibition, which is amazing. So I had Doctor Strangelove is probably one of my favourite films ever, so I wanted to do something with that, and I was going to do a big kind of portrait of George C. Scott, or, you know, all those crazy faces he makes. And I was kind of sketching it out, and it just looked kind of crap, and then I watched The Shining and Barry Lyndon again, and just... totally soaked it up, and just as it was coming to the end of The Shining, I was just like, oh, of course, that photo that creeped me out when I was about 12, so
yeah.
And like, really stuck with me for throughout the years, just that, you know, he's always been the caretaker. so I just started kind of blowing it up. I found a picture of it online and blew it up. I just kind of started tracing it out onto paper, and I was like, after about 15 faces, I was like, oh shit, it's going to take like, I don't know, days to do it.
Yeah.
So it actually was the longest I've spent on a piece. Like,
oh, really?
Because I usually like to work faster, or just kind of get bored or whatever.
Yeah.
But for this, I just knuckled in and
got
kinda,
every one of them in there.
Got every one of them in, yeah. There was a few blurry characters that I kind of left out because I couldn't figure out what was going on.
All right, okay. I believe you cameo in it as well.
Cameo. at the very end, Kalina was saying, why, you should put yourself in it as the Jack character, and I was like, oh no, like, and I had Jack done, and she's like, well, put yourself in it somewhere, and I was like, oh yeah. So I drew it in, and I used the wrong pen, so I just basically drew a beard over one of the guys, so you just see this kind of really shiny beard on one of the characters, and it's like, damn. But most people wouldn't notice, I'm sure.
Well, I was looking at it with John McGuire, and there's a guy with the beard that I was like, oh, that must, I was saying to John that I was looking for like you in it,
yeah.
And I was like, that must be him there, because he's like the only person,
the only one with a beard.
I was
yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, that's him there. I was like, oh yeah, that is him there. I can totally see him.
I think probably there's probably about 50 self portraits in there by accident. So
and you were saying on your blog that as you said there, that Dr. Strangelove is your favourite
Kubrick movie.
Yeah, probably my favourite film. I mean, I'd say I've seen it about, I don't know, 15 times. I went to see it there in the IFI, first time I saw it in the cinema, and just like seeing it for the first time again, it was just like, oh my god.
Yeah, yeah.
So, just stunning film, like, it's just ridiculous. I want to do something with George C. Scott, like, he's such an amazing character in that. I was reading about it actually. Kubrick got him to really overact for the when they were doing the test scenes.
Right.
So he did all this big boisterous acting, and then he used that actual footage, and George C. Scott was like, bollocks, like he was really pissed off with Kubrick then over the years. But it's just some of the best, one of the best characters in a film of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. What else has gone on with you in terms of, you know, other projects?
I'm working away on bits and bobs of commercial stuff, but I'm at the moment I'm kind of halfway through a picture book based on these Beast characters I've been doing, and also I'm nearly finished a short animation which will be shown at Darklight next week, so I'm kind of freaking out about that. So
are you like animating it? Or
I've animated as much as I can do, like very basic animation, and then I'm getting some help from the lads and Daddy across the way there.
So
it has to be all done and dusted. My older brother Andrew wrote all the dialogue in it, and Simon, my younger brother, is doing the music, so it's total family collaboration.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. So good. Hopefully it'll be very simple and basic.
But when is the Darklight Festival again? That's coming up soon.
It's next, the end of next week. We're doing it. We're doing like a talk about it on Friday.
Okay.
Friday week. Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, thanks very much for talking to us.
Cool, and thank you, Liam.
All right. Thanks very much.
Now then, Dimitri, you know how we've always talked about the possibility of something going wrong with the bomb. The bomb, Dimitri. The hydrogen bomb. Well, now, what happened is one of our base commanders, he had a sort of, well, he went a little funny in the head. You know, just a little funny. And he went and did a silly thing. Well, I'll tell you what he did. He ordered his planes to attack your country. Well, let me finish, Dimitri. Let me finish, Dimitri. Well, listen, how do you think I feel about it? Can you imagine how I feel about it, Dimitri? Why do you think I'm calling you? Just to say hello? Of course I like to speak to you. Of course I like to say hello. Not now, but any time, Dimitri. I'm just calling up to tell you something terrible has happened. It's a friendly call. Of course it's a friendly call. Listen, if it wasn't friendly, you probably wouldn't have even got it.
And now we're outside the Lighthouse Cinema in Smithfield. We're here with none other than Brett Lee.
Hi, guys.
How are you doing?
I'm wonderful.
Yeah, you good?
Yeah.
Are you enjoying the exhibition?
The exhibition is fantastic. Big fan of Kubrick. Big fan of a lot of the artists. Haven't seen the work. But the beer is
trying
good.
To preempt us cornering you on that. Good stuff.
We're not in the Central Hotel. for once. This is the outside broadcast. OBU, as you professionals probably call it.
Yes, yeah, we do.
Yes. OBU.
We want to ask, what's your favourite Kubrick movie? What's Brenby love?
Ooh,
you have to choose one.
Just one?
Yeah. None of this, I like them all. Crap, it began
I
all
guess. I guess The Shining, probably.
Good call.
Like, design-wise, colours, textures, characters. It's probably the most kind of accessible one as well. Like, I don't know, there's something about it. I think it's his most perfect film. It's, like, perfect right from the first frame to the last. Although I'm a big fan of Eyes Wide Shut as well, which is probably a bit controversial. But, I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan of Eyes Wide Shut as well.
More nudity, the better.
Yes, absolutely.
People having sex in masks. Can't really go wrong.
That's what I'm subscribed to anyway.
Yeah. I have a huge collection of movies in that genre. And his is the only one I'm allowed to talk about in public. So that's, you know.
What do you think Kubrick's work kind of lends itself to an exhibition like this in terms of, you know, visuals? And
well, I guess he has, you know, because of he's such a creative genius, he's so visual in terms of how he produces the movie. you know, if you could take any still of his film, and they're just absolutely beautiful. Creative people, visual people respond to that. Like, I think that a lot of the artists here, you could see from the work, I haven't seen it. I imagine it's probably very good.
It's on a high quality.
Even here all night, surely.
Well, the Heineken hasn't rolled out yet, but other beers are available. But I think, you know, it lends itself really well to an exhibition because of that. It has a very designy feel, all his pictures. I mean, particularly in The Shining, from the carpets, you know, to the colours when they go outside in the snow. Everything, you know, everything is just so precise that I think it really catches the eye from a design point of view. Mm. And I think that's why people respond to it from the creative community.
Has it ever occurred to you that I have agreed to look after the Overlook Hotel until May the 1st? Does it matter to you at all that the owners have placed their complete confidence and trust in me and that I have signed a letter of agreement, a contract, in which I have accepted that responsibility? You have the slightest idea what a moral and ethical principle is, do you? Has it ever occurred to you what would happen to my future if I were to fail to live up to my responsibilities? Has it ever occurred to you? Has it?
Get away from me.
Why?
I just want to go back to my room.
Well, that's just about it for this week's show. We hope you've enjoyed our outside broadcast.
Absolutely, I've enjoyed it.
Yes, we should do it more often.
Appreciating art is great. It's so easy. I'm just like, ooh, I really appreciate this art.
It involved a lot of like holding my chin, you know, and staring at it while hobnobbing with all people I didn't know.
And there was free drinks. Like, I've got every art exhibition ever from now on. If there's free drinks, you should advertise that shit.
Yeah, so if you want to, you should, well, not if you want to, you should. Yeah. Recommended that you go and see the Stanley Kubrick Taming Light exhibition, which runs till the end of the month, the end of October, in the Lighthouse Cinema in Smithfield, curated by Mr. John Maguire, who we spoke to earlier.
Yeah.
And just to mention, the specially commissioned poster that was made for the event, which is by Martin Anzin, I think it's Anzin.
I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Yes, we're famously bad for pronouncing names. So we'll link up the website where you can see all the paintings and illustrations and photographs and all the pieces.
But you really should go to Smithfield and see them in person.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we go out, because we won't be talking to you before this happens, but the 24-hour Irish Comics Day is taking place very soon. In fact, on Saturday the 17th of October in the Central Hotel in Dublin. It's running all day.
24 hours.
Yeah, it starts at around 11. There's loads of workshops on.
Yeah.
And we'll be there at 7 p.m.
Yeah. Well, we'll be there all day, but yeah, we have a panel at 7 p.m.
Yes, we'll be hosting a panel.
And we'll be signing autographs, but only for like an hour afterwards.
Yeah, 6x10 glossies. So we hope to see you there.
Just before we go, Stephen Thompson's new comic, Die Hard Year One, It's out in shops right now, written by Howard Chaykin. We'll have a review in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
but
just a heads up.
It's out and it looks great. So I highly recommend picking it up, although I haven't read it, so I won't recommend it that highly. But I'm sure it's good.
Excellent. Well, from the Lighthouse Cinema in Smithfield.
Good night, Dublin.